listening to Real World News.
Interview with the Climate Justice and Energy Coordinator of Friends of the Earth International. The new round of negotiations of the United Nations Conference on Climate Change is coming to a close on Friday in Durban, South Africa, without progress in terms of reaching an agreement on the main aspect to tackle the climate crisis, drastic emission reductions by developed countries. The developed countries, which are historically responsible for climate change, have once again avoided committing to emission cuts. They even went as far as being close to reaching a system change in the international fight against the climate crisis that will give way to a system of voluntary instead of legally binding cuts. The coordinator of the Climate Justice and Energy Program of Friends of the Earth International, Sarah Jane Clifton, regretted the developed countries' lack of action. "We've seen, unfortunately, a further effort from the US, Canada and Japan and the other rich industrialized countries to unravel the existing commitments, and what that means is inaction on emissions, but also shifting the burden of cutting emissions to developing countries," Sarah Jane to Real World Radio. Let's now listen to the interview.
Well, I think we have to evaluate this process by looking at the urgency now of the need for action on the climate crisis. We know that the climate crisis has already arrived, that millions of people around the world are losing their livelihoods, very often losing their lives because of very destructive weather patterns, increased flooding, hurricanes, droughts, and all of the devastating impacts that come from that, like food shortages, people losing their homes and the places where they live. And we also know that we've got a very small window in which to tackle greenhouse gas emissions in a fair and equitable way if we're going to avoid the tipping points that mean catastrophic climate change. So that's the backdrop for where we are here. And with that in mind, what we needed to see in these negotiations was rich industrialized countries who are responsible mostly for this problem of climate change committing to cut their emissions deeply and urgently, and to provide finance to developing countries so that they can develop in a sustainable way and also protect these vulnerable communities who are already facing the impacts of climate. We urgently needed to see that here. Now, this is what the rich countries committed to in 1992. And what we've seen since the Climate Convention was signed was inaction, inaction, inaction. Then 2 years ago, at the Copenhagen climate talks, we saw the rich industrialized countries, the US and others, starting to unravel those commitments that they'd made. So what we needed to see here was reinforcing those commitments and action to actually deliver them. Instead, we've seen, unfortunately, a further effort by the US, Canada, Japan, and the other rich industrialized countries to unravel the existing commitments. Now, what that means is inaction on emissions, but also shifting the burden for cutting emissions to developing countries. And what's extra worrying here is that the European Union, which has always been trying to position itself as a climate leader, has now started to actually push an agenda in line with the US and others, a very destructive agenda, which would unravel the existing basis for international climate action. So the conditionalities of the European Union are that emerging economies, the big emerging economies like Brazil, China, India, South Africa, also take on legally binding commitments to reduce their emissions. Now, we know that the effort to tackle climate change has to be a global one, that every country has to do their share. But our view as Friends of the Earth International is that every country has to do their fair share. And we know that 75% of the emissions in the atmosphere have come from rich industrialized countries, not China, India, Brazil, but from the US, Canada, the European Union. And we believe that first and foremost, those countries must commit to reduce their emissions, provide finance to the developing countries who made less of a contribution to the problem, and then countries like China and India can also take action. We're not saying that China and India shouldn't take action, but there's a sequence, and that sequence is logical, it's fair, and it should be followed. And this is how the European Union and the US are trying to shift that burden. They're trying to get rid of their responsibility and trying to push it onto countries like China. Now, China has a lot of emissions, but it has a lot of people. And if you look at the per capita emissions of China, the emissions per person, it's a lot, much, much lower than the United States. And so in pushing the burden onto China, you're actually pushing the burden for climate action and the responsibility of rich countries onto poor people in China. who still need development, who still need to increase their emissions a little bit to have a decent standard of living. So Friends of the Earth International is completely opposed to carbon trading in all of its forms. We see it as a false solution to the climate crisis. It's interesting how you see carbon trading, how it evolved internationally and how it became part of the international negotiations. It was pushed when countries were talking about the fact that rich countries needed to reduce their emissions, and the United States, which ended up not agreeing to reduce its emissions, pushed for carbon trading as a loophole, as a way of avoiding taking on any commitments. And carbon trading has grown. It's expanded through the Clean Development Mechanism in the UN. But now what we're seeing here is a push to further expand carbon trading, to have new types of carbon markets which further allow rich countries to avoid their responsibility to cut emissions. We think it's incredibly dangerous, and we think that countries should say no here to the expansion of carbon trading, and should also stop and shut down all the existing carbon trading mechanisms. We need real action to cut emissions, and that means we need to transform our economies. All of the real solutions which we know are out there: renewable energy, agroecology, reducing the excessive consumption in the north. It's not difficult. We have those solutions already. But the push for carbon trading is coming from the countries that don't want to take action, and the businesses, the polluting industries, and the financial interests want to profit from pollution and profit from the climate crisis. Well, the Africa Group as a region has taken a very strong progressive position in these negotiations. In fact, the larger grouping that the Africa Group is a part, called the G77 plus China, which is a grouping of all the developing countries, is standing strong still here in the negotiations for a strong and just agreement which would tackle climate change in a fair and equitable way. The Africa Group is saying that rich countries should commit to emissions reductions under the second commitment period of what's called the Kyoto Protocol. That's the existing agreement for rich countries. And it's holding firm on that and saying that that is, should be the essential basis of the negotiations. But that position is being undercut by the US and EU and others, who are saying, no, we don't want the Kyoto Protocol. We agreed it, but no, actually, we don't like it anymore, and pushing for a new mandate. Now, a new mandate sounds great. It sounds like increased enthusiasm to tackle emissions. But what a new mandate would mean is 5 to 10 years of inaction, when we need urgent action now. We've got a basis. We've got a mandate. We just need countries to deliver it. Well, the parallel activities, activities of movements on the outside have been very, very inspiring, very, very energetic. There's been a space where movements from across South Africa have come together to discuss the real solutions to climate change and how you achieve them. And we've seen a really fantastic range of organisations who've been participating in those discussions, from farmers' movements to trade unions to lots and lots of climate justice activists from lots of different spaces. Some really amazing conversations, but very importantly, what we've seen outside is protest and action and celebration of the livelihoods and the real solutions that we actually need to see. There's a lot of energy on the outside. A lot of movements have come together and had discussions that they've not had before, and will be going back home and taking those ideas and taking that energy back to their movements at home. There's a lot of optimism which has come out of that outside space, and I think the main message that we need to take from that is the solutions to climate change really lies in strengthening those movements, in building people's movements, strengthening the connections between them, between farmers' movements, climate justice activists, between the unions, and building our power so that the governments that come to these negotiations will be accountable to us. They'll hear our voices and will advance our interests, rather than pushing the interests of the big polluters, the multinational companies, and the financial elites. And so there is a positive message coming from this. Even if tomorrow we don't see the action which we need, which is very likely, there's been a lot of energy and optimism for how we do tackle this crisis.
You are listening to Real World News.